With me today is Matt King, the CEO of FanDuel, and Paul Rushton, our Commercial Finance Director. Let me start by telling you, as I sit here in New York, how excited we are to be adding FanDuel to our portfolio of leading sports brands and to welcome the FanDuel team to the group. The purpose of this call is to take you through the key points of today's announcement and outline why we believe this transaction strengthens the opportunity we have to target the prospective US sports betting market. I'm going to start by briefly taking you through the presentation we published on our corporate website and that we've emailed out to you, and then we can take any questions you may have. And I'll start with the summary on slide 2. The transaction involves the creation of a new US business comprising the existing Paddy Power Betfair US asset and the FanDuel business. We will own 61% of the combined business and have operational control. For some specific financials for you to consider, in addition to our US assets, we will contribute $158 million of cash at closing, and the impact of today's announcement on the group 2018 EBITDA guidance that we published in our Q1 trading update is not expected to be material. You will recall that that guidance range excluded any investment in sports betting, and it is still too early to give you guidance on that. And on a pro forma basis, the combined business post-synergies is currently operating a broadly break-even EBITDA. Please note that, again, this is before investment in sports betting. FanDuel is a leading US daily fantasy operator with a leading brand and with 7 million registered customers across the US. And I'll shortly take you through the strength of the brand in more detail. And finally, on slide two, we summarize the strategic rationale. The transaction gives us the opportunity to scale quickly in the US, bringing to the group a strong brand and a large existing customer base that have a high propensity to bet on sports, which when combined with our existing US assets create the industry's leading online business with an extensive national footprint. And as you'll be aware, the potential US sports betting market will likely require unique market access partnerships in each state that chooses to regulate. The enhanced scale we now have further strengthens our position in discussions with potential market access partners. On slide 3, we highlight the key terms and structure of the transaction. As I already mentioned, we will be contributing our US assets and a cash contribution. This cash will primarily be used to pay down existing FanDuel debt and to fund working capital. We expect completion in Q3, and the transaction is subject to customary regulatory approvals. There's a mechanism via call and put options to take our ownership from the initial 61% to 80% and 100%. After 3 years and 5 years respectively. And the last thing I'd highlight is that all major FanDuel shareholders, who are important strategic partners, are rolling their shares into the combined business. Slide 4 shows you the profile of both the US daily fantasy sports market and of the FanDuel business. The total US market for daily fantasy sports, of which FanDuel has over 40% market share, has over $3 billion of entry fees and over $300 million of revenues from 3 million active customers. Following 2 years of positive momentum, in total 21 states have now favorably regulated for daily fantasy, and there is continued legislative momentum. As I referenced earlier, FanDuel has a substantial customer base, with a database of 7 million registered users, clearly a valuable asset to potentially cross-sell to sports betting and online casino. And FanDuel also has a well-invested brand, with approximately $400 million of cumulative marketing spend to date. And on slide 5, I'd like to highlight why I believe it is a great brand for targeting the US sports betting market. You can see on this slide that FanDuel customers have many attractive customer attributes when it comes to the potential for sports betting. 84% of the existing customer base tell us that they already bet on sports. They are also mobile-centric and a good age profile for sports betting. On the bottom of this slide, we have outlined some of the key reasons why we believe daily fantasy brands are an ideal route to market for sports betting. Firstly, they have a high brand awareness amongst US sports fans. Market research also shows that daily fantasy brands over-index on attributes that are important to online sports customers, such as being secure, legitimate, and giving value for money. And in addition, daily fantasy brands have a unique advantage in an environment where the market is likely to be opening up on a phased, state-by-state basis, and that they can continue to grow brand awareness and acquire customers in the state before sports betting opens up. Slide 6 visualises to you the size and footprint of our combined US operations. With $265 million of revenues and circa 8 million registered customers across 46 US states. And finally, on slide 7, we have summarised why we believe we're in a strong position to target the prospective sports betting opportunity. I believe there are four categories of requirements an operator needs to succeed in any state that may open up for sports betting. Firstly, market access, which will be dependent on state-by-state regulations. Prior to today's announcement, we already have strong existing relationships with key stakeholders across the USA. In addition, FanDuel makes us an even more attractive partner. Secondly, it will be critical to have operational capabilities across digital marketing, risk and trading, customer ops, and sports products. We are well positioned here, given both our existing global sports betting expertise and our US-based sports operations. Our go-live preparations for online sports betting are well advanced. The third key category is having the customers and brands to attract sports bettors. The addition of the FanDuel brand and customers, its strong relationships with media and marketing partners, coupled with our TVG customer and distribution network, puts us in a strong position. And finally, this is all underpinned by our substantial financial firepower. I'm now happy to take your questions. Rotan, if you want to manage the questions for us, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, your question and answer session will now begin. If you wish to ask a question, please unmute your phone, key star 1, record your name, and then press the hash key. If you then decide to withdraw your question, simply key star 2. All questions will be answered in the order received, and you will be advised when to ask your question. All other lines will remain on listen only, and we already have an incoming question from the line of name was not recorded, so whoever asked the question, please go ahead.
This is Chris Stevens from UBS. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Hi, Chris.
Okay, great. Hi, guys. Just a couple of questions, please. I mean, at this stage, how do you expect market access to work? Do you expect it to be more like revenue share agreements or like an upfront purchase of a license? The second question is, I think somewhere in the presentation it says FanDuel has customers in 40 states. But DFS is only actually legal in 21 states. Could you just explain how it works, and maybe you can just explain how it works from a regulatory point of view? And then lastly, does FanDuel have any existing partnerships with sports teams or leagues, like sponsorship agreements, that are worth us knowing about? Thank you.
Okay. Well, look, thank you, Chris. In terms of the way that market access unfolds. Yeah, we've got some experience of this as a result of our relationship in New Jersey, where we operate our casinos, and that operates on a revenue share basis. And you know, we expect that market model will end up being reasonably well represented. There could also be instances where people pay up front for them as well. But we'll just have to wait and see how the regulations pan out. I'll let Matt pick up your two other questions, Chris, around the regulation in 21 states and the partnerships.
Sure. Hi, Chris. It's great to meet you. On your regulatory question, we do operate in 40 states. The point that Peter was making around the 21 states is that there's 21 states that have passed laws that affirmatively confirm the legal regime for fantasy sports, as well as provide for a regulatory framework. The other 19 states where we operate are states that where existing legal precedent supports the operation of the platform in those states. This is a proven legal framework that goes all the way back, in many cases, 30-plus years with the advent of season-long fantasy sports. And so it's a relatively settled legal framework, but one that relies on case law precedent as opposed to an affirmative law that's been passed. What the company has done over the last 2 years as the category became more mainstream is we've worked with lawmakers in the various states to pass laws to ensure that there is a coherent regulatory framework around that. And we'll continue that process. So you'll look for that 21 state number to increase over time. On the partnerships with sports teams and leagues, we do have a number of very attractive and valuable partnerships. Probably the most marquee is our partnership with the NBA at the league level. These tend to be a mixture of marketing as well as product-oriented partnerships. We also have team-level partnerships with a number of professional football and basketball teams. And so they're an attractive brand-building exercise as well as opportunities for product integration. And that's a strategy that we'll look to continue to evolve as sports betting becomes legal.
Great.
Thank you.
That's very clear. Thank you very much.
We have an incoming question from the line of
Seth Young, Morgan Stanley.
Please go ahead.
Good evening, and thanks very much for taking the question. I've got a few as well. First of all, just to understand the synergies from this deal, you said it's broadly break-even as a combined group, but obviously FanDuel itself was loss-making last year at EBITDA. You've mentioned the tech staff there as well, so what I'm trying to understand, I guess, is this all from duplicated functions, or you're also cutting some marketing as well? There's a sort of tension, I guess, how viable you think DFS is as a long-term business and how much it is now just a brand and customer building exercise for sports. So any thoughts around that would be very useful. Second of all, if you could give any color on understanding the terms or mechanics of the call and put options, the phrase you've used there is pervading market valuations. I'm not quite sure what that means. And then also just clarify if any further US acquisitions would also be put into this entity. And then finally, sort of a more of a strategic one, I guess, please, Peter, which is, can you just give us some color on how the conversations you've had with partners potentially looking at market access and looking at the wider market, how they developed in the fairly short, but I imagine fairly busy time since the Supreme Court judgment. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Ed. Look, in terms of your question around synergies, you know, be very clear that, you know, the purpose of this transaction is not to try and save costs. You know, I mean, if you look at the requirements we're going to have to, you know, grow and support the nascent sports betting business, you know, it's going to require additional investment at some stage, which we'll come back and talk to you about. So this is not going to be driven by that. I think it's inevitable that there will be some opportunities to cut out some marketing costs in the short term. But I think this deal is driven very much by giving us, you know, what we think will be a very strong position in the market to take advantage of the repeal of PASPA. I do think that the U.S. market is going to unfold in a unique way, and I think in the long term, I think Daily Fantasy will be part of that. I think bracket games, other free-to-play games, and sports betting will all sit alongside those, together with, of course, parimutuel horse racing, which we have a very strong position in. With regards to the mechanics of the transaction, I'm afraid it is what it says on the tin. So, you know, there are put call options at year 3 and 5, and we will use prevailing market valuations, which we'll get externally. And, you know, in terms of how we're thinking about, you know, further U.S. acquisitions, you know, I think we've got a very strong position at the moment, and, you know, we're looking forward to the NFL season, taking advantage of our opportunities to do sports betting there, and of course continue to push our daily fantasy sports business.
Thank you. And then just the final question was, you can get any colour on how conversations have progressed in the sort of short time since the judgment? Just from the outside, it's difficult to get a feel for it in the same way, so any kind of high level colour would be useful.
Ed, at this stage, there isn't that much clarity around how the rules and regulations are going to work on a state-by-state basis. It's very difficult to make any sensible comment for you at this stage.
Okay, thanks.
We have an incoming question, but the name was not recorded. So whoever asked the question, please go ahead.
Hi there, I think that's me. Just one quick question, guys. Just wondering, in states where FanDuel will be able to operate as a B2C business, will you still be seeking to offer your services to land-based casino partners, either in a B2B or JV capacity, or will you just be going with the B2C FanDuel? FanDuel route? Thank you.
Yeah, we, if you look at our operations around the world, we are predominantly a business that has a collection of wonderful brands for our customers, whether that's Sportsbet in Australia, Paddy Power and Betfair, operating in Europe and globally, and of course here in the US, we had Draft, we now got FanDuel and TVG. So I think you should expect us to continue to push hard on the B2C model, but we also have B2B relationships in various parts of the group as well. So at this stage, it's hard to rule anything out when we don't really know how the market's going to evolve.
Thank you.
We have an incoming question from the line of
Jeffrey Harwood of Stifel.
Please go ahead.
Hello. I've got a few questions. First of all, could you outline the background to the transaction? Secondly, what growth rate is the business currently achieving? And thirdly, does this in any way affect the previous plans for the share buyback?
So thank you, Jeffrey, for the questions. I mean, we're not going to walk you through the trials and tribulations of or the conversations we have leading up to this. It's something we've been working on for a long time. We're very excited about the opportunities in the US, and we're pleased that we got some certainty around the state of the repeal of PASP on the 14th of May. And we're very excited about the position that we'll now have to target this emerging market opportunity. I think at this stage we're not going to be making comments about the growth rates of the assets, and with regards to our previous communication about the share buyback, this transaction does not change any of those plans.
Sure. Okay. Thank you.
We have an incoming question from the line of
Gavin Kelleher.
Please go ahead.
Hi, Gavin Kelleher from GoodBuddy here. Just in terms of the brand you'll use, obviously FanDuel is going to be a key one, but could you still maybe use the TVG brand for sports betting in the US? Will it be a multi-brand approach, or how should we think about that? Just in terms of Draft and the unique product set Draft had in terms of it being a snake draft, which is different to what FanDuel and DraftKings offer, will that just be rolled into the FanDuel offering now? And in terms of FanDuel, how strong is FanDuel in the five states that look like they're going to move this year in terms of sports betting? That's New Jersey, New York, Mississippi, West Virginia, and Pennsylvania.
Hi, Gavin. Nice to talk to you. Look, I mean, in terms of the strength of brands, look, we're very proud of the TVG business, which I think over the years has proved to be very successful in the pari-mutuel horse racing market. Despite the fact that we don't own any of the tracks or any of the marquee races, and so I think we will continue to invest and grow that business, and clearly we'll be thoughtful about how we can leverage sports betting for those customers as and when it becomes appropriate. For the Draft product, I think we like the snake draft concept. I think it's a good recreational product for customers in the US, and I think it's something that we'll continue to be offering to customers. And I'll let Matt pick up on the strength of the FanDuel brand in the five early states. But clearly, one of the reasons we've undertaken this transaction is we think that the brand's going to play very well for us in the states which are opening up, but also will allow us to acquire customers in the states which will soon open up.
Sure. Thanks, Peter. So we feel very good about how the product is positioned in the states where sports betting is likely to be opened up. Our user base indexes pretty uniformly with population. And when you look across that, we know in those markets that the users have a high existing avidity with sports betting. When we've spoken to those users via consumer research about how they would think about the FanDuel brand as a sports betting platform, as Peter noted in the presentation, we get very high marks for trust and value, among other attributes, as well as the kind of more fun stuff like making sports more exciting. And so we think it's from a brand positioning standpoint in those markets we're incredibly well positioned. So in short, we feel really good about leveraging our existing user database brand and product platform in those markets.
Perfect. Thanks a million, guys.
Thanks, Kevin.
We have an incoming question from the line of
Joe Thomas, HSBC.
Please go ahead.
Good evening. I hope you can hear me okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can, Joe.
Hi, good evening. Could I just ask you, on valuation, I mean, this really looks like it's a deal about, from what you've said, that it's really about acquiring a database that will give you a good foothold. And I'm just trying to get a sense of, you know, because there are obviously no sort of valuation numbers in the press release. I'm just trying to understand, you know, how you put a value on those customers. And also, you know, if you can give any sense of the demographics and profile and last activity of that database, it would be good. And then also, I'm just wondering why it is FanDuel that you have chosen to buy, rather than the business that looks more successful in DraftKings, or at least it's bigger. And perhaps you can just talk around a little bit about the background there.
Well, Lord Joe, I mean, let's be really clear here. We're not buying a database, right? You know, this is it's much more than that. There's a great group of colleagues in this business who have built a very successful business over the last several years, and we're really, really excited to have those colleagues and that talent in our family now to help us, you know, tackle the sports betting market, and of course continue to take advantage of Daily Fantasy, which is an important product in the US market. We shared a little bit of data with you on the demographics of the FanDuel customers in the presentation. At this stage, we're not going to give you any further information on that. And look, in terms of, you know, why FanDuel, you know, we think we've got a very good cultural fit with the business. You know, if you go far enough back, you know, Nigel, who actually founded FanDuel, was one of the early people who worked at Betfair. So, you know, if you go back far enough, we're all related. And I think that, you know, that helps, you know, with the values and culture that the businesses have, and I think, you know, should set us up well to work successfully well together.
Okay, thanks a lot.
We have an incoming question from the line of
Patrick Coffey, Barclays.
Please go ahead.
Hi guys, can you hear me?
Yeah, hi Patrick.
Hi. So I may have missed this one earlier, but how long have you been in discussions with FanDuel? First question. Secondly, the structure of the deal means that you still have significant cash on the balance sheet to invest in further US M&A potentially. You're currently in three verticals, ADW, DFS, and iGaming. Do you see opportunities outside of those verticals into sports betting? And I guess linked to the M&A question, would you be happy about stopping your share buyback if opportunities came up? Next question, just on the US more broadly. You know, there's going to be significant investment in, you know, staff, marketing, technology, lawyers, etc., and offices. I appreciate a lot of unknown, but at some stage, should we be thinking this year you might need to change the guidance to make sure that we all have that investment in our numbers? And, you know, how substantial could that be? And then just finally, could you just talk us through the benefits of the proprietary trading and technology that FanDuel has, and are there any synergies for the Paddy Power business more broadly from now having access to that technology? Thanks.
Well, look, Patrick, nice to talk to you. It sounds like you're somewhere a little bit windy, so I hope everyone can hear the reply. But look, in terms of how long we've been working on this, you know, this is something that's been in the works for some time. It's not a rabbit that was pulled out of the hat since PASPA was repealed. It's something that we were thinking long and hard about, giving ourselves an opportunity to try and create some real advantage in the US market, whether PASPA was repealed or not. Instead, it's been repealed, so it gives us a lot of excitement about this market. In terms of the structure of the deal and our balance sheets and all that sort of stuff, you'll know, and we shared the figures with you in terms of the amount of cash that we're putting into this transaction. The business is still very well capitalized. We're not changing our view of the guidance on our medium-term leverage target either. So we do have the ability to continue to invest in the business, pursue further M&A, and to return funds to shareholders. And as I said on previous occasions, I think we'll end up doing all three. We don't necessarily have to do one or the other. We'll see how the market unfolds. I think we do have good, very strong position in ADW, as you called out, in iGaming here in New Jersey, and clearly now in Daily Fantasy, and we'll be looking to take advantage of those verticals to make sure we get a strong position in sports betting in the US. The share buyback, we'll be talking more about, but in terms of the question was asked earlier, we do plan to go ahead with the share buyback. This transaction doesn't stop that. Clearly, one of the advantages of share buybacks are that if you do find something you want to do, you can stop them. But that this transaction would not require us to stop the plans we shared with you previously. In terms of how much we'll end up spending in the US more broadly, I think it's important to recognise that across the group now in the US, we have substantial colleagues in two major centres on the East and the West Coast, hundreds of people, and I think we're well set up to take advantage of the opening up of the market. And of course, we also have extensive resources in our businesses in Europe and Australia that we can also leverage. So, for example, we do take a lot of bets on US sports in Australia. So I think we'll come and talk to you subsequently about the additional investment for US sports betting, and you'll notice that in our guidance we're very clear that it excludes that. I think I'll hand over to Matt, who can talk to you about the benefits of the proprietary technology that FanDuel will have. At this stage, we are not factoring in any sort of benefits of using that back into the mothership in Europe or Australia. Clearly, it's going to be an important part of the equation for us here in the US.
So on the proprietary technology, I'll bucket it into two dimensions. One is the actual technology itself, and then the second is really the liquidity and the size and the scale that we have in the business. On the technology itself, one of the benefits of what we've been through over the last 2 years in terms of the formalization of regulation in the fantasy sports industry is that we have spent a lot of time developing a onboarding flow and a wallet technology. Think about it as the front end of the user experience that will be highly leverageable in a sports betting world. And so that's things like making it very easy for us to verify that a customer is of age, that they are who they say they are, all key steps that will be required whether that user is looking to play a fantasy sports game or a sports betting contest. And so a lot of the upfront technology is highly leverageable, as is a lot of the experiential technology that we really built around the U.S. sports fan and how they like to experience sports. We have 90%+ of our users that actually engage with what we call live scoring, which is the experience of following how your team does while they watch the sporting event. We are the default second screen for our users while they watch sports. And on an NFL Sunday, they're on the app more than an hour. And so we get really high engagement, and that type of engagement and technology is actually something that, again, will be applicable in a fantasy sports world as well as a sports betting world. So we think that there's a lot of leverage in the platform as we transition from a fantasy-only world to a world that has the ability to both offer fantasy sports as well as sports betting. And then on the liquidity side, what we are able to do, not dissimilar from the Betfair exchange business, by creating scale around liquidity, it allows us to offer a broader breadth of product to our users, as well as higher prize pools and other things which are highly valued by the user. And so while not totally falling in the bucket of proprietary technology, we do think it's a core competitive advantage that we have that's very hard for others to replicate.
Thank you. And just one follow-up. Is it possible for you to do a B2B deal with a casino operator, potentially a multi-state casino operator, and using the FanDuel technology but not having to use the likes of OpenBet or anyone else on a B2B side of things.
Patrick, we'll come back and talk subsequently about how we're going to sort of enter the market. I mean, I think as I say in the presentation, market access is one important component, and I think I'd look at that separately to the sort of the technology as well. But we're well down the track in terms of our solutions for sports betting. Thanks, Patrick.
Thanks.
We have an incoming question from the line of
David Jennings. Davey,
please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, guys. I have two questions, please. Firstly, I was just wondering if you could maybe give us some color on the extent of the marketing deals that FanDuel already has in place in the U.S. And the duration of some of those marketing deals. And then, as was linked to that, if you could just maybe give us a sense of the current mix within the business in terms of the way you market FanDuel between kind of traditional television advertising and online marketing. Thanks.
Yeah, David. I mean, we don't normally get into these sort of details, obviously for commercially sensitive reasons. We won't be sharing the information about the sort of marketing deals that we have with FanDuel. Clearly, we think the brand is very well placed, and we're excited to see how we can leverage it moving forward. I'll let Matt very briefly just comment on the mix between TV and digital, but we don't want to give too much of the secret sauce away.
Sure. So a majority of our ad spend is on online and digital channels. Digital, we think about it split across a number of different forms, everything from affiliate marketing through more direct channel means. We do complement that with a portion of, call it above-the-line TV spend that helps us both prime the pump for acquisition but also helps reactivate existing users. So if you think about one of the dynamics that exists in fantasy sports is people tend to be focused on which sports they want to play. So come the start of football season, one of the important dynamics we have is we'll typically deploy TV as well as broader reach radio and out of home to not just acquire new users but also to bring users back that might have played football with us the prior season, but we want to make sure that we reactivate and maximize the reactivation of older cohorts.